listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron. Wayne is out of town this week, so it's the Just Us department today with me and special guest David Walker from the First 48. Dave, thanks for coming on the show today, brother. Appreciate you coming on.
And I appreciate it. Anytime I get to talk to law enforcement and the people in general, it's a good day.
Well, great. Thank you so much for coming on to the show. You know, folks, David was a Tulsa police detective, part of the one of the regulars on the First 48 television show. That show is still running, and it's running hard on Arts and Entertainment Network for sure. And I saw old Dave last night wearing a cowboy hat when it was snowing on that case. It was a murder case where it was snow on the ground a few years back. And anyway. So thanks for coming on the show. So let me, I guess, kind of start, more questions that I have, particularly about your experience, in the Tulsa Police Department as a homicide detective. It seems to me as I watch, and again, David, I didn't get a chance to tell you, I think I've logged 237 shows now. Damn. I'm such a bad host, and I got knocked out with a bad signal. Okay. So you guys work together really well. Tell me about the chemistry that you guys have in Tulsa that seems to be different than almost any department out there. I'm not trying to say, I mean, every department has its nuances, but kind of tell me the highlights of the camaraderie and the chemistry you guys have as a unit or had as a unit.
I think it's very important that we work it together. Mm-hmm. Since I was the supervisor of the unit, I got to pick from everybody in the department, really. So you get the pick of the litter. And when you get that, you can certainly pick the right team. And since I'm a baseball guy, I've grown up in the baseball world. I kind of liken our team to a baseball team. I mean, we can't have 10 pitchers on the team because they all want the ball. Mm-hmm. To get out there and play the corner infields, the corner outfielders, and that sort of thing. So, and that's what you see when we attack a case. It's everybody. Sure, there's a lead investigator, and that happens on every case. That's like your starting pitcher. I mean, he's up. Whoever's up is up.
Right.
And us will support it. And man, we just as many people as we need to get that thing solved in. I hate to say 48 hours, but you know, sometimes it doesn't work that way. But boy, we've got a killer on the run. The idea is to catch the killer, and that's kind of what we do. At a clip of about 96% of the time. So I like that. I brag on those guys. The team, it really makes it an enjoyable right. If you enjoy working murders. But the team is the chemistry's there. And we're all in it, and you know, we're all up at 3 o'clock in the morning rolling around in the bushes, so we know what it feels like.
Yes, sir. So with that, do you have like a batting roster, and then you know, like whoever is next, and whoever's next is that, does it work like that, or do you kind of pick and choose based on the nuances when you're a supervisor of the case?
Well, if you really look in the background of the First 48 cases, you'll see a murder board.
Okay.
Or is the lineup? I mean, whoever's up, I got two names up, the lead and whoever's going to help him or help that person. It doesn't have to be a him. And then I've got four on the bench. And then I got two in the locker room. So whoever had the last murder is probably going to not get called unless it's a real big deal.
Right.
But those two that are up, they know when they're coming. So hopefully when I call them at 2 a.m., they're clean and sober and we're ready to go to work. So,
right. That's true. So
he knows what's going on.
Okay. Because it is kind of interesting, like how do you, how do you make that assignment? And oftentimes, you'll see as the show starts, hey, I was at home with my kids or I was about ready to go to a kid's baseball game. And I got the call, you know, here I am at 3 o'clock in the morning heading on the freeway. So I knew there was some method to the madness with that. What would you say? I'll just ask you this. Here's another question. Why is motive so important? And I know this sounds like a dumb question, and so to kind of cover myself a little bit, in the Federal Bureau of Prisons, we have things happen. Obviously, we have a special investigative agent. We have, you know, we investigate things that happen inside the prison system, and we just kind of figure out who did it. You know what I mean? We're just like, did you do this or did you not do it? You know what I mean? And then we just kind of either prosecute or discipline from there. But I notice, you know, not only for you guys, but every, you know, a lot of the other shows is like, well, we never knew why. Now, is that for the family? So the family has closure, or is that kind of a major element having to know the motivation behind the crime or the homicide in this case?
Well, I always like to say, if we get to the why pretty quick, we'll get to the who.
Okay.
If a murder happened, you'll get to the who. If you don't know why it happened, the who is really kind of hard to figure out. Like those serial killers or spree killers that really have no connection to your victim.
Okay.
It's really hard. But if you can find the why, domestic or, you know, I always say money, sex, drugs, and a vendetta will get you killed. So we go down that list and somebody will tell us, yeah, they're mad at this guy. This guy's mad at them. They ripped him off. You know, it's not really kind of like rocket science.
Yeah, so
following the trail.
No, I understand it. So you're saying if you have the motive, or you can pretty get an idea of the motive, it may help you find who did it if you don't have that person already figured out, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Why will tell you where you need to go to ask the questions who. And if you don't get right to the who, I guarantee you that the people we're talking to don't want to be talked to by us and don't lead us in the right direction.
Gotcha. Another angle I want to take with that same question, let's say you got the guy, okay? And I'll say guy, whatever, but you got the guy red-handed, you know, the cell phone day, band guy's there sitting in the room, and you have enough to charge him. I mean, you know, and then the guy, you know, it's like, hey, and you call the guy in and this isn't just y'all, it could be anybody. Hey, we want to hear your side of the story. Or are you willing to talk to us? The guy says, I want a lawyer up. I'm not saying shit. You know, I want a lawyer up. And so the guy, you know, obviously the guy lawyers up, he goes to trial or whatever. And, you know, we get the thing on the screen. He got sentenced to life or 50 years or whatever. But oftentimes you'll see the detective say, man, I wish we would have known, you know, the guy lawyered up, you know, and we'll never know why he did it. What are your thoughts on that? Is that kind of a big bummer for the detective, or how's that? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think, you know, everybody wants to know why. But yeah. If you do and they're wrapped up, it's not really necessary for us to tell why. The lawyers want the why because that's really pretty for the jury. I mean, it tells a neat little story. You can wrap it up. If you got who, though, you got fingerprints, you got DNA, you got gunshot residue, you've got cell phone records, you've got the killer right there. We don't really need to know the why if we have the who. Motive's not that important. And I'll guarantee you, we may think about it for a minute, but then we're on to the next case. There's going to be another body drop, and we'll just have to get after it. So, you know, God love the victim, but, you know, sure. Find out who. Why I with you.
Yeah, I just, you know, especially the ex post facto why. I'm like, well, you know, you got the guy, you know, or the gal, whatever, they're in prison, and that's that. So, okay. So another question I had is, I know you guys talk about camaraderie and you guys work so well together. Now, y'all clear in Tulsa a high percentage of your cases. It seems like you guys clear, right? What was it, 90, 95%? I mean, some outrageous amount, good amount of your cases, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're not here to tell you who didn't do it. We're here to solve it. So that's what that's what the city hires us to do. And by golly, that's what we're going to do. And you go in with that mindset, you're going to win the game. Mm-hmm. If not, you're going to win that. And the experience of the group, the team, there's always, you know, we've got people that work on cell phones. We've got interrogators. We've got the back behind the scenes people that will do the intel workforce. It's just, I don't get a phone call in the middle of the night saying, well, we'll never solve this.
No, I know that. But just the fact, I think the numbers speak for themselves on the on y'all's percentage rate on what you've cleared. And so without, and if I'm being redundant, that's fine. But I was going to, you know, the follow-up question to that is, you talked about the good teamwork. You talk about the personnel that you have with the analysts, the cell phones, and those people. Now, you guys have a polygraph operator? I don't really see a lot of polygraph stuff too much in Tulsa.
We do not use a polygraph very often. I mean, we probably have one somewhere, but I couldn't tell you that number.
Why do you think that is? I'm just curious. It's no big deal. I'm just curious. But
I don't think we need it. I mean, if somebody wants to say I didn't do it and we can prove that you did, then that's all we really need.
Yeah, man.
It's just something for the defense team, I think.
Okay.
Or the inter- folks. But
I guess it
speaks for itself. I just never had an occasion to need a polygraph.
Well, yeah. If you notice on some of the other episodes of other towns, you know, they'll use that as maybe an investigative measure to see or whatever. I think, you know, if you ask a guy for his DNA, that's a pretty powerful question. You know, hey, man, we need you to swab your mouth here. It's like, oh, boy, here we go, you know. And, you know, between that and the cell phone, that's pretty much.
Say that. I mean, really, you know, cops will say, well, okay, what do you want that for? What if I did 40 years ago? That sort of thing. So you get the wheels turning when you ask for DNA.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So are there other things about your team that you haven't talked about that attribute to why you guys' success rate is so high?
I think, you know, our administration and the city, along with the mayor, and now that we started solving so many, that's expected. I think in 2016, we had 82 murders, and we solved 82 of those murders.
Wow.
And then 2017,
it looks like he got hit with a technical issue too, or I got hit with a technical issue. We'll see. Let me go there for a second. The mayor and the city. I understand that in Mobile that the mayor is kind of like no more first 48. I heard a rumor anyway that they're going to try to put the kibosh on that because of the administration. I mean, was the administration and the mayor's office supportive of y'all in the show? Obviously.
Yeah, I think it really is up to the chief of police.
Or chief of police.
The chief, before Chief Chuck Jordan in 2014 said it's a go, was the chief Ron Palmer, and he said we weren't going to do it. So kind of the mayor kind of went along with that. Chief Jordan said, can you do it? And I said, well, you're the chief. Yeah, we can do it. And we did, and it's been a highly successful for the city. So I think it's how you attack the media, how you attack this phenomenon of TV, live TV type of things that are going on, real life TV. The mayor's on board. I have not had a problem. One, the only problem we have now is you go to the grocery store and you get noticed. People talk to you, and that's a good thing,
right?
Because you know, the city then knows us as people.
Right, right. They're
willing to talk to us when it comes in. You know, those bigger towns, not so sure that we're as personable.
Right.
And you come in as a cop with a gun and you're demanding.
Right.
A lot of that just goes to the heart of it and to, you know, who we hire as homicide detectives. I think I always looked at it, if you don't have a heart, you're not going to, you know, a caring heart, you're not going to get out there and get what you need. So I think that's, you know, you don't have to be the biggest, you don't have to be the strongest, you don't have to be the smartest, but boy, you got to care enough to keep.
And I think that's why just people connect with you guys in Tulsa. I mean, and again, the other guys are fine too, but I think just, you know, from whatever, you know, research I've conducted in different groups and Instagram groups and talking to other fans, you know, they're just, you guys really have a sweet spot there with the viewing audience, just because you guys are just really nice. I don't want to say normal, but yeah, normal, you know, kind of normal-ish kind of guys, at least, you know, on the program. So really, really good. So I guess talk about, if you can, let's see, we got time, your favorite case and then your least favorite case. Kind of give me a thumbnail.
Wow. You know, I talk about the first case. I came in the homicide May 31st, 2011.
Okay.
And I came from robbery. So the way I worked is I always gave information out to the field on robbers when I was in robbery. These are the people robbing folks. And I forget the guy, Billy Joe or Bobby Joe, or one of these guys was robbing and breaking into houses. And right outside of the Tulsa city limits, he broke into a house, tied some people up, and kidnapped the guy and was bringing him back into Tulsa. We were able to find that car and the house he was going to. A uniformed officer drove up, engaged the bad guy. The bad guy took a shot at the cop, and that was my first day at lunch. You know, we hear on the radio, shots fired, policemen under fire, and so here we go. He goes into the Walmart store, fires some more rounds off upstairs, or, you know, into the roof. Of course, that everybody in Walmart is running out as we're arriving. He mixes in with them and runs across the street and tries to carjack a car. It was a Chinese national student from Tulsa University who didn't speak English. Did not understand what was happening. The guy, the bad guy, shot and killed that guy. Oh. So we've got a kidnapping. We've got an officer shot at, and we've got now a murder in the street. The bad guy jumps in the back of a pickup. It's an Oklahoma bred pickup, so the drivers kind of understood what was going on, and they gave the pickup up to the bad guy. He drove down the street. But by that time, man, the police were just lined up down the street, and it was just six officers shot the car and killed killed our suspect.
Right.
And so now we got officer-involved shooting. We've got kidnapping. We've got a murder. We've got all kinds of people that we have to interview. And we're only down to, you know, six to eight people coming. But it was a big deal. Chiefs dropped up, and chiefs drove them through there. And it's one of those leadership things.
Did y'all have a big after-action review and all that?
I did, but the department didn't. And I think that's one thing that we lose on that is because I had plenty of things to tell the administration. Right. But, you know, we had to get busy and get to work. We recovered over 100 guns on that deal because he was stealing mostly firearms.
Oh, wow.
And it was just an interesting thing. So what I teach about it is I say, you got to be ready day one. You know, you're the homicide supervisor. It can tick off in a heartbeat. So that one's memorable because it was just a big deal.
Yeah.
There's a lot of other ones that we worked. The Good Friday killings that were just race based in 2012. That was a big national event. And the one I despise the most because I think we kind of messed up a little bit. It is Christian Welch. It's still unsolved. It was a bludgeoning death, dope related. Should have found, you know, we got the why. We just don't know who. And then they set the house on fire.
Mm.
It's pretty much down to the, it was, there's nothing left.
Right.
And then find her, and then the medical examiner says, well, it's a murder.
Was that on the show or was that outside the show?
They did one. They didn't do it right. Well, I think it's actually the show did do something on that later on.
Okay.
I left, but it was probably film. I mean, we went everywhere. So the film was there, or the show was there, and they used the most film, I think, on the first 48 on that show.
Okay.
Christian Welch. So there is a first 48 show on that.
It won't take. Well, no,
it's still unsolved.
Yeah. Now there have been times I've seen you in action, and you get a little angry with. I don't want to say that. It seems like you get a little high spirited sometimes in the interrogation room when you're interviewing, and I like that. Now I was like, man, you get up there and give the guy the right act. What were some of the things that would piss you off the most or trigger you the most when you're interviewing a suspect?
Well, it's always fun when the suspect says, "Do you think?" or ask you, "Do you think I'm that stupid?" Because man, you just hound on that. Yeah, well, yes, I do. But you know, when they keep denying and denying and denying, I don't like it with my kids. I don't like it with suspects. It's just one of those things that, you know, yeah, it happens. I'm an emotional guy. I got thrown out of baseball when I was younger, so I know.
Yeah, no, man.
But when you do me wrong, I'm going to be after you. So it's not scripted.
No, I know that. Yeah.
When I get angry, I'll get angry. And what I tell people is I think the jury needs to see it.
Because yeah.
I mean, I'm not getting angry at a 14-year-old kid that's a witness.
No,
I'm getting angry at somebody just pulled the trigger on somebody. So yeah. Sometimes these people need to know they did wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, to deny and deny, and especially when you guys just have all the evidence in the world or a lot of evidence in the world, and you're like, nope, wasn't me, wasn't there. I was at my girlfriend's house. I was at my mom's house. You're like, come on, man. You know what I mean? And it's just not you guys. That's every town. You know what I mean? These guys sit there like, wasn't me. I don't know. And then you just, what would you do if I told you, you know, I have this. Is this you? You know, speaking of, man, what is the deal with Quick Trip in Tulsa? Wow.
Well, Quick Trip is pretty much nationwide, but they're home based right here in Tulsa.
Oh, they are home based in Tulsa. Okay.
And the guy that was in charge of Quick Trip security was a brother of a district court judge here.
Oh, wow.
We worked closely together. And they just put top-notch security systems in. He was kind of very, very in tune with what we needed in law enforcement. Okay. And they pretty much gave us everything we need. Some of these places will say, go get a search warrant.
Yeah.
But damn, no, they're talking about somebody dead in your parking lot.
I know. Quick Trip has the great cameras. They also have that kind of camera that's at about, 5'3". You know what I mean?
Right.
And right on that side entrance. And man, does that get some good footage of these guys, man, coming and going.
Yeah. So Quick Trip is very law enforcement friendly.
Oh, my God. You'd think they'd probably have a better, as good as the FBI or anything else. I mean, those guys are on top of their game. I kind of say that joke. I mean, I'm dead serious. If you think about it, you know, how many episodes is like the homeless camp near the Quick Trip, or, you know, the guy went into Quick Trip to buy lighter fluid, or right there.
Yeah. I've seen the Quick Trip setup, you know, it's casino like. So yeah. They've got big cameras everywhere and they can punch in and you can say, I need footage from 2:00 in the morning. They'll punch it in and there it is.
There it is. Now, are there two Quick Trips in Tulsa that pretty much get on the show? Or how many Quick Trips are there in Tulsa?
Oh, man, there's all kinds of Quick Trips in Tulsa.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, there's hundreds.
But
it's a big deal. Well, there's one at 15th and Denver that's kind of a homeless camp.
Now, I'm writing this down because 15th and Denver. Because I'm going to come up there and and I'm going to visit. And I'm going to see you. Jason said he'd walk me through the department. And I'm going to go by Quick Trip. And I want to take a selfie of whoever's with me. And that's part of the show.
Yeah, and don't forget the Gilcrease Museum Road, 200 North Gilcrease Museum Road. That's right by the Katy Trail. So that's where the homeless folks go. I don't remember solving many crimes with that camera, but boy, they're right there.
Yeah. Yeah, man. So, it's kind of, you know, as a fan now, I'm talking to you as a fan, it's kind of part of the first 48 Tulsa experiences, is either, you know, if you see a cat, you say cat, or if you see a Quick Trip cup in the interrogation room or something, or Quick Trip itself, or the, you know, so between those are some drinking games that people can use while they're watching.
I can't do that. You know, take me back to my college days, but okay.
There's actually an Instagram called The Cats of First 48. I don't know if you heard about it, but it's there's actually an Instagram with it. But anyway, they finally started following me since I've had you and Jason on the show. Now I'm worthy. It's amazing. Now I'm worthy. People talk to me. I wasn't worthy before, but that's okay.
It's all you sure. Sure you have. I mean, everybody.
But anyway, so what types of things are you involved with now? I know, what year did you retire or depart from the force, and what kinds of stuff are you doing now, Dave?
Well, in August 31st, 2018 was my last day on the job.
Okay.
And right from there, I was going to go right into, you know, saving the world. The police community divide was a big deal with some officer-involved shootings. I worked actually two white officers on unarmed black men.
Right.
Resulted in shootings, so I don't know too many people that got to work two of those. So I kind of have some insight into how those go. I'm from St. Louis, so I was going to run the St. Louis. I got a production company. I don't have a production. I had a friend that was a production company, ran wow. one. We did a sizzle on the police community divide. George Floyd happened right about that time, and that kind of took us out. You know, the big names got in there, and big money got in there, so. But what I learned from that is it's a big deal. I mean, it's not going to be easy for us to solve the police community divide because the community don't want to listen. The police don't want to listen. So it's a big thing. It's not as hard. I thought it would be simple. You know, hey, I'm a cop. Listen, this is what we face. You see right. it, what you see is really what we get. That's why we do things. Show us your hands. Control the hands. Just those sort of simple things.
Yeah, take your hands out of your pocket. Right.
And it's not because you're any particular sex, race, or creed. It's just we need to see your hands.
Right. Police procedure. Right.
Solution. Right. Show us your hands. You know, then all you can do is kick me or spit on me. And you're not going to be able to kill me. But that didn't work out. So right now what I am doing is researching a book. And it's called Six-Year-Olds. It has something to do with baseball. And it goes back to Tony Lucadella and, and all this really kind of forms around baseball. But I am a commissioner on the Housing Authority. So you know, homeless is a big deal. And I'm a commissioner on the Human Rights Commission here in Tulsa.
Wow, okay.
I put my hand in some of this stuff, but what I do know now is I don't know much because people on those commissions are really smart, and I spent 36 years in law enforcement, and not too often does kicking in a door have anything to do with the commissions that I'm on. So
sure.
I just sit there and listen and learn. But, man, there's just so much stuff to do and to do my little bit to make it a little better.
So just pretty much community activist, community involvement, involved in the community, and then have your project with your book. And I saw you posted something about, you said you were in the burglary unit and it was with a gentleman. Remember that? You posted something the other day? No? Yes? Facebook?
Well, I was in the burglary unit. Yes. Oh, that's right. My corporal, Clark Williams. He was actually on the Tulsa Housing Commission. He was a lawyer, too. So he's another one of those smart guys that I kind of like to follow around and say that was my idea. but yeah, Clark's was in my burglary unit and when I took that over in 2001. And you speak of burglaries, I like chasing burglars. You know, they're probably not going to kill you when you catch them. And, you know, you get to give people stuff back and they're really happy for that. But you know,
why did you go over to home side?
Well, the natural progression went robbery position came open. I took that from burglary. I went to robbery, and I did robbery 6 years. And then the Oklahoma Hall of Fame sergeant over homicide retired. And so I kind of just slid into that spot. And, you know, really, we step on the shoulders of Mike Huff. He's the one that started solving, 80%. And the only way to get better than that is to solve 96. So,
right.
So Mike's very complimentary to my group, but really the way he worked the murders is the way I learned how to do it.
Okay. Well, that's an amazing career. Do you, looking back on your police career, what kinds of things might you have done different, if anything?
You look at police work, I don't know that I would have done much different. And mm-hmm. I think my trajectory was spot on and perfect. I mean, I don't want to say I was perfect, but, you know, I spent 7 years in patrol. I learned that. And then I got promoted pretty quick and learned how to run a squad out in the field. And then I was on the SWAT team for 10 years. And I went undercover for 10 years. Wow. And learned how to write reports. I wasn't a big doper, so I wasn't very good at buying dope.
Right. And
one thing I learned about undercover is you got Tulsa to thank for no dope problems in the world. Right. We'll never know that. I mean, it's just always going to be. There's always going to be something in the drug world. Yeah. And then I went out for, a year in purgatory because I went to internal affairs for a year. Mm. That wasn't any fun for anybody.
No.
But I think,
was that your last assignment was internal therapy?
Before I went into burglary.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Hmm.
And I always like to say, you know, when you're in the right spot,
right.
And I wasn't in the right spot in undercover, but I knew how to investigate. And right. When I got burglary, that's when I hit my stride. I was able to put a team together that worked well together in burglary. There's a guy that's still on the first 48, John Brown. I like to always say he was with me longer than I was with my wife. I mean, we yeah. worked in patrol, we worked undercover, worked, and you just kind of, you know, I followed him basically, but I always go wherever I went. But I tell you, it's personal. I wouldn't have, the worst 2 years of my career, and I was talking to my kid about this the other day, is when I started worrying about what other people were doing. You know, the administration saying, well, why are you making that choice? I wouldn't do that. And really try to get into their job. It's not my job to get into their job. And it was just miserable. So when I finally learned that, hey, you know, I'm not responsible for that. I'm responsible for solving robberies or under and. So personally, I think that's why law enforcement works so well. I think that's why Tulsa works so well. We're compartmentalized. We, you know, there's a chief up there, but I really don't have to deal with them very often.
Right.
So.
Right. No, I like that too. You know, same thing with the Justice Department. My zone was pretty compartmentalized, and we had a special management unit with sex offenders and drug offenders, and just kind of was able to. Right off into the sunset. Now, golly, it sounds like how many years of service did you have?
I did 36 years.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. I tell you, I didn't even think I was old till about 34 years into it. Man, this is a young man's game, and it's time to find another one.
How many years did Brown have?
I want to just congratulate you in the prison system because, we couldn't do that either. So that's what I'm glad you're there.
You know, it's just a different, like you said, you know, the mindset's the same, but just because it's an environment, it's like a little city, right? Prisons are a little city. Some of them are bigger than others. And we try to use classification, methods to get the right classification in terms of security level and, try to make those decisions. But man, when we get, we get into those penitentiaries, even El Reno, Oklahoma is a medium, and El Reno, Oklahoma, man, there's some lifers up there, in the medium. Now across from it is a minimum security camp, right? So we got a lot of the white collar guys trying to go to from Dallas, trying to go to El Reno camp. because it's like a Motel 6. But boy, on inside the fence, it's a different matter. Sometimes I miss it, and sometimes I don't, you know, type of thing. That's been quite a while. I didn't work as long as you. But I was able to retire at 50 with the full package, you know, and started in my 20s type of thing. So I did retire. So that was it's not that I left, I retired. I was thinking, so John Brown, how many years does he have in? He must have 50 years in. What?
he's got like 30 now.
Oh, okay. I see.
He's talking about retiring. We just got back from Alaskan cruise. His wife and mine are friends, and we're friends. So that camaraderie is good because, you know, you probably know this. If you get scared together, there's a bond.
Yeah, no, I'm exact. And I cried, man, when you retired and you gave your little going away speech, right? You know, you talked about him, how close you were. And that was a very touching episode when they got some footage of you and stuff. Hey, is Mark Kennedy still or did he retire?
No, Mark's still bouncing around up there.
Oh, man. Mark. He's yeah, boy.
Fans, you know, he's a corner infielder, corner outfielder. But when it's his turn to get the ball, he'll take it.
Yeah, man. That's good, man. That's good to see. And Chase Calhoun or whatever, is he still around?
Chase is still around, but he got promoted.
That's right.
Auto theft unit now.
Okay.
Ritter got promoted, and I think he runs the robbery unit. So
who's that?
Justin Ritter.
Oh, Ritter. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, those are the ones we keep
shilling.
People. I mean, they're going to get promoted, and they're actually one. The sheriff in Tulsa County is Vic Rigolato. He was a homicide detective when I first came in 2011, 2012.
Okay. So, is Nate Schilling still around?
Well, you know, I always like to say that I didn't screw up when I picked Nathan Schilling as the corporal because. Is spot on and he's so steady.
he has those cell phone skills, electronic skills, and seems like he has a good personality, just real level. He seems like a real level guy and smart. So,
yeah. There's a caring individual. He's got a great wife, a great family at home.
Yeah, the ranch, all that good stuff.
Yeah, it's just, he was the only one that applied for that slot. That's why I always like. I didn't screw up by not picking him. I didn't really have a
choice. You're batting 1,000. One to one. So, that's good. Yeah, I just, you know, that's interesting because, you know, as a fan, we just see these seasons, right? And then you don't know who's still there, who's not. You know, I mean, you can tell by the opening credits, you know, what season, you know, you're at, because the opening credits kind of change. They get more updated with time, right? That now we're in the red first 48 type of stuff and the red credits and everything for here recently. So
I really do watch that.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's how you can kind of differentiate, because I don't know. Oh, you know, is this 2016 or whatever? And then, you know, some of the other shows from Harris County, Dallas, Miami, woo, man, you know, that's some Stone Ages. You can tell by the phone, right? The guy's not even using a Palm Pilot or something. You know what I mean? Like, holy crap, what year was this? No big deal. I mean, crime is crime, even if it was 2009, 2010. But sometimes you want to see something a little bit more recent. So, And I guess the other person I'd ask about is that Margo, that your technology lady, she's still there?
Margo is still there, but I think they've reorganized their intel unit, which is a big deal. I think intelligence-based policing helps us predict who we need to protect the citizens from. And she was an integral part of that. She had no law enforcement experience before she bopped into our intel unit. And then we commandeered her and put in her office right next to us. And she was just invaluable, but they kind of stole her and put her into the intel unit itself.
Oh, no.
Still solving the crimes, but, man, she would be a phone call we'd make at 3 o'clock in the morning. She'd get on her computer and tell us who we're supposed to chase next. So, that's the whole thing. The more eyes we got looking at this thing, the better.
Yeah, especially, you got an analyst back there that has, the skill set and can tell you stuff. And then, all the cell phone data and, looking at the movement and cell phones and stuff like that.
I mean, especially when they don't have to be told what to do next. They can kind of see where we're going. And, we can already be there before we have to get there, so to speak.
Well, that's good, and it's kind of a shame. Hopefully, maybe they'll get a dedicated intelligence person just for you guys, But
well, if I was chief of the day, that's what would happen.
Yeah, definitely. I'll put in a recommendation. Just kidding. Because you would definitely want that in house. So, in your unit. So I think that's really good. So, good. It sounds like things have gone good. So for the future, what do you look? You're researching on writing a book or trying to get this book out for the future?
Well, the only thing I'm really researching it because I'm finding out I don't know anything about writing a book. I have talked to several authors, and they say you have to do a lot of research.
Right.
Back in college, and I wasn't really great at that. But I'm finding that out. I'm on the – you see some of my catch journeys. I'm playing with people to kind of break it down a little bit.
Right.
Kind of the hook into it. It's either going to be a children's book.
Okay.
Or of these books, because I think there's so many great cops out there that can tell a better story than I on these cases they've got, then write a book about a cop case it's already been done.
Well, I'm not sure if you want to self-publish, Dave, you don't feel like, like you said, make the product real, make it, from your heart, and you can always self-publish. I'm about ready to do another book here on federal time credits. It's coming out in July, but I did another book about recovery from heroin abuse or whatever back in 2007. I self-published that off of Amazon. Did real well. So, don't let your heart be. You can watch some YouTube videos and you can knock that out, brother. If you ever need any help, give me a holler. We'll help you get your. I'll give you some pointers because that's something you can totally do yourself and do it on the cheap. Actually, it's not like it used to be. So.
Well, that's good. Really good enough.
Yeah, man, I'm here for you, brother. Yeah, man.
We're all right.
for sure. So, I guess we'll wrap up here in a second. Now, are there any social media sites or is there? How can listeners or fans get a hold of you? Do you have like a website or an email that folks?
I do have a website.
It's or Facebook or whatever. Go ahead.
SGT ME Tours. I have an ME Tours Facebook page. It's on Tours. I got an Instagram under Sergeant Dave Walker. I'm on LinkedIn somehow. I know all you people out watching true crime stuff can figure out where I'm at.
Oh, I know.
I just posted something on ME Tours of a catch session I had with a guy that was in foster care.
Right.
Okay. Next comment there, the people I arrested for murder I played catch with. It's an interesting thing that's happening. So
I like that.
Hopefully I will get in touch with you and we can self-publish something.
And then watch for my friend request on Instagram. I don't think I hit you up there yet. So we'll definitely...
Yeah, absolutely.
Instagram. I'm a member of your Me Tours Facebook. Love seeing it. So thank you very much for that. Well, David, thanks again for coming on the show today. It's been a pleasure talking with you and sharing some of your experience, past and present. And I want to thank you for your service, brother. I mean, really, thank you for your service. It's a lot of years of dedicated service. That's a lot of action. You guys see things sometimes you just can't unsee. And I just, folks, you coming from whatever I experienced, this gentleman's done 50-fold in terms of you know, traumatic types of things. So again, we want to thank you for your service, brother.
Absolutely. I appreciate you, Bruce, and you did the work too. That just gives, you know, the appreciation is really all we need, isn't it?
That's
you know, that you're doing a good job. It speaks volumes. So I appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay, everybody. So again, another great episode on the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. Come by our Facebook page at Concierge Coaches Show. We are on Apple Podcast. We are on Amazon Audible. We are on iHeartMedia. It's a little podcast that could. So please come see our episodes, and they're there for you to download and watch for free. And until next time, we'll see you here on the Concierge Coaches Show. So take care, everybody. Thanks, David.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA